When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Whitetail Podcast. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Canucks beat writer Patrick Johnson. You start off the Under the Microscopes series. So in this, we're sort of looking at, you know, ups, downs, pluses, minuses, like basically looking at players and how they fit. And in looking at some of the first ones that you've done, you mostly handled the defense.
Yeah.
I started to really, to steal a phrase from someone that we used to work with, ponder how much upheaval there's going to be on this team.
It's a good question. Derek Pouliot was never going to come back. He's gone. Like, that's sort of been officially, I mean, it hasn't been officially announced, but we know that. It's been confirmed. You know, Ben Hutton, it's hard to imagine. I think I said it. It's hard to imagine him really coming back, given, you know, the need to find holes, their stated desire to bring another defenseman. But he's still there. They will theoretically have rights to him. They do have to qualify him. I have a hard time imagining them not doing that just for the fact that that seems like bizarre.
Asset management?
Yeah, bizarre management of your players and what you have. I do wonder if the Canucks are nervous. I mean, they shouldn't be, but whether they're nervous about arbitration with a guy like Hutton, because he does have that right. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he's played in the NHL. I mean, they handed Erik Gudbranson a three-year contract worth $4 million a year, and I think it's fair to say Hutton's a better defender than Erik Gudbranson. So they've kind of built their own sort of destiny with him if they were going to re-sign him. So, you know, I do find myself wondering if there is a you know, a team out there that could use it. He's realistically, I think I said, he's realistically probably a third pairing defenseman. He's a, you know, guy you can plug in the lineup, and if you have the right partner for him, he'll be fine. Like, he's not going to blow you out of the water. He scored 5 goals this year. He's not an amazing offensive talent. But I mean, the overall question though is, are they going to change things up? Jim Benning seems to be making it clear, don't expect me to sign Erik Karlsson. Okay. But as I've written about on Monday, I don't think, you know, you should be turning to Tyler Myers as the other guy to chase after. I mean, there's a good argument, and I've said it before, for Jake Gardner. But I find myself wondering more broadly. You know, Elliot Friedman in 31 Thoughts on the weekend obviously touched on the Canucks. In fact, talked about Edler, Hutton, Tanev. Is it possible only one of those guys is back?
You're the expert.
Yeah.
And we've been kind of going down this path all year. Mm-hmm. And I don't disagree with the path. I just struggle with the fact that everyone talks about the Canucks blue line and how it needs so much work and how, you know, they brought the same guys back. And yet that's the part that everyone wants to change so much. And fine, fair enough. Mm-hmm. If you can upgrade all those guys. But yeah, Pouliot's gone. Gudbranson's gone.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of guys in Utica who you could say could step up and be NHL defensemen. You might want to give a couple of guys the shot. We know Quinn Hughes is coming. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is Jet Wu too much of a stretch?
No,
you're looking at free agency. So, like, honestly, yeah, it is great to say Tanev, Edler, right. Hutton, you know, Pouliot's already gone. We know they, you know, guys like Gudbranson went for a forward. Like, at what point are you replacing, all due respect, Dros with Dros?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I mean, the part of that equation is that, you know, maybe they don't re-sign Alex Edler. Maybe in the end that Edler says that third year, that desire to not be exposed to the expansion draft in Seattle is enough. I mean, it's a weird equation, though, because you think about Edler, for instance. He doesn't want to go. So if he doesn't get his contract, is he really going to go to free agency and go somewhere else? I mean, that it's just such a strange sort of logical path he's built for himself. So I do have a hard time seeing him going anywhere. But if they don't, they've got to keep Hutton because they need NHL bodies.
It. Are there enough quality bodies out there that they could acquire? I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, there were, you know, there was a few. Tyson Barry was a name that, I mean, he didn't connect to the Canucks exactly, but Tyson Barry's a name that I think he thinks could be on the move. I mean, I think there are going to be some moves happening. It's going to be interesting, though, because there's proactive teams now in the NHL that think about this stuff and think down the line. And I look at that and I say, okay, does that mean they're going to try to take advantage of the Canucks? Canucks do have a ton of cap room. They could take in, you know, they've never shown any real interest in weaponizing that cap space, but they could.
Yeah.
Do you get for that?
It was the Seabrook and the third for the 10th ridiculousness going around last week. But on that point, it's like, how many guys are out there that you could bring in? Because if you go back, a guy like Shen was so much, I don't want to say of a success, but he was so much less of a disaster than a Michael Delzato was.
Right. That's the way to frame it.
Yeah. I actually think that's a little unfair to Shen, because I think he was for what he was expected to be.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the bar was low. That's my point.
Getting another Luke Shen, is that better than keeping Ben Hutton?
It could be. Yeah, it's possible. Shen is your sixth defenseman is fine. You know, you probably do better, but as things stand, they have to, you know, part of the challenge is dressing an NHL lineup, and some of that's their own making. Like, they haven't drafted any other defensemen that have really shown any potential to be anything more than kind of a depth guy. Ashton Sautner, obviously, you know, came in, did well at the end of the season, and has been a useful player, but he's not a guy that's going to be like, oh my goodness, this guy should be playing more. He probably played just the right amount. Guillaume Brisebois didn't show us anything. You know, Alex Piego, we know what he is.
Yeah.
There's nobody champion the bit. I mean, Oliu Levy is the X factor. The fact that he didn't get it, you know, got hurt and didn't play any games, you know, did throw that part of the plan out of alignment, that they did have a sort of vision for this guy being, you know, I think they see him as being kind of a number three kind of guy. And he's not a top end, top pairing defenseman, but he's, in their eyes, should be a good defenseman. And we'll see how next year plays out. I mean, I don't think he's going to be ready to go to start the season. He's going to have to go to Utica. He's going to have to get healthy and go to Utica and then come in. So, you know, everything's kind of delayed.
You would imagine that happens pretty quickly.
But though, I do imagine it happens pretty quickly because, you know, at the end of the day, he's a guy that, I mean, it's been 3 years since he was drafted.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the opportunity's there.
The opportunity's there. It's been 3 years since he drafted. And like every other defenseman that was drafted around him has played in the NHL. Like, he's the only outlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, I actually, you could say, oh, he's a bust. I mean, I actually go from the standpoint that everybody else has played in the NHL. There's every reason to think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be fine. He was playing well enough in Utica to think. But at the end of the day, you're right. I mean, it's sort of like, okay, how do you actually make this defense better? Or are you just shuffling deck chairs? They are at serious risk of doing that. I think they do need to sit back and say, you know, I think there is that desire to make a big trade. You know, there's been plenty of chatter, and I think it's, makes sense. You know the optics of ownership, right? This is ownership. They got the draft here. They want to be seen to be making progress. You know, I mean, Benning has been, you know, the ownership has met with Benning a lot lately. You know, they want to understand what his plan is. They want to see what he's doing. I think, you know, as has been said by many of us out there now, you know, they're happy with Jim. They're pretty happy with Jim the drafter. They're not happy with Jim the manager.
Consensus seems to be sign a defenseman, trade for a forward. Do you think that that's just looking at what's available? Do you think that's the route they'll go, or vice versa, or it could be either or?
Yeah, I think it could be either or. I think, you know, it is good to realize that they're interested in a guy like Jeff Skinner. Like, Jeff Skinner's a good offensive winger in sort of that right age bracket. You know, he's going to come in. He's going to score some goals. He's guaranteed to be better than Louis Erickson. I don't mind saying that. And he comes in. He would be great. That would be great for their forward unit. They need a top six winger. He's a top six winger without a doubt. I mean, maybe that means you can then turn around and flip Jake Virtanen, and you get some kind of sort of similarly, is tantalizing too much of a statement about Jake Virtanen, but a guy that's got some skills that you look at and you go, okay, I can see, you know, there's some hope there, or there's something you can spin there anyway.
Virtanen for Puljujärvi, like,
yeah, yeah.
No, I've seen that one because the players in similar age, and And
that's not what they need. I mean, Puljujärvi, I think Puljujärvi, yeah, I don't know what to think of Puljujärvi. I still sort of err on the side of guy got so much skill as an 18-year-old. He can't have completely disappeared. I do think if they trade for Tannen, it's to find a defenseman. I don't know necessarily where you go find that defenseman, but you know, Virtanen had a, you know, it's weird. He had such a weird season because he did score 15 goals. I mean, that's nothing to sniff at. And if he hadn't been playing with Brandon Sutter for 6 weeks or whatever it was, he probably hits 20. That's pretty good. You know, that's
not for a sixth overall pick.
Not for sixth. I'm just and saying for an NHLer, that's pretty good. Yeah, but no, not absolutely. For sixth. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a miss on the pick, right? As an NHLer, he's an NHLer.
Well, I see.
So, but can you? What do you get back for a 20? You know, a guy who theoretically is a 20 goal scorer.
But I think the issue when you look at Virtanen for me is it's not. I mean, the totals obviously matter, to some degree, but it's more that you will see those moments with the speed and the size.
Yeah.
And you'd go, okay, regardless of what the point totals are, is this an impact NHLer? Because he has moments where he teases you that he could be.
Yeah.
And then you have to ask yourself, well, why don't you see that more consistently, shift to shift, game to game? And they're sort of at that point as a coaching staff to go, okay, if it's not going to happen here, is it ever going to happen?
Well, and I think I said it before. I mean, I heard from Travis Green, the scribe, who he wanted to play with Pettersson and Besser. And it's what you'd maybe like to think Jake Virtanen, but it's not Jake Virtanen.
Yeah.
He's not a puck fetcher. He's a shooter. He wants to carry the puck in the zone. He did show some progress as being a guy that can set up some plays off the wing. But at the end of the day, you know, Virtanen is a guy that was always bigger than his peers in junior, developed because of that, was a star because of that. Struggled to transition that to the NHL, partly I would suggest because he's at home. I think that's been a challenge for him. You know, he likes playing in Vancouver, don't get me wrong, but I think in the big picture, you know, he's the kind of guy that probably, I think playing at home, especially now, you know, with how much money is involved and the sort of twisted incentives that get thrown in because of that, you know, you like to dream that everybody comes in. Every player comes in wanting just to win trophies, right? You talk about, you know, wants to win the Stanley Cup, wants to, you know, finish first in the division, wants to be the scoring leader, you know, but there is that sort of creep that comes in where you sort of go, okay, I'm getting paid pretty well. I'm doing, you know, an adequate enough job. And that's that's human nature for some people. And I think, you know, what you're running into with Virtanen is a little bit of that. I think the reality is that, you know, he, especially now, like I said, he sort of found his groove. You know, he didn't score a lot, but he scored enough to say, okay, well, at least he can, you know, he's not a total bust, but he's made the NHL. He's going to stay here for a while because he can score. I mean, look at the worst case scenario now is that he turns into Zach Cassian. You know, Zach Cassian doesn't score a ton, but he plays every night for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, he's become a sort of a useful NHL player. He does enough that he stays in the lineup. And, you know, I mean, that's not a lot to write home about when you're a high draft pick, but that's
kind of reality. Well, I was going to say, I think that's, you know, I think for Virtanen, you would be looking at moving on one or two more times. I mean, that's where Cassian finally found that comfort zone without the albatross of the, hey, I'm Cody Hodgson, or hey, I'm a top
prospect. Well, and he sort of the Sabres, too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really interesting. When you look at the teams that are left in the playoffs, and it is funny, I think, that, you know, after that remarkable first round, and even what we're seeing early in the second, you know, you start to see that level off that, yes, it was shocking to see, you know, to see Calgary with their record and maybe even Winnipeg, and certainly, obviously, Tampa Bay, Washington, to see that those teams fall by the wayside was a shock. Now you're seeing, okay, yeah, for Columbus, maybe already for Carolina, you know, they do have to go home. You see the clock strike midnight for them. And, you know, again, I'm not writing St. Louis off either, but here we are staring at perhaps a Boston-San Jose final, which is, you know, two of the teams that maybe weren't top of mind, but were certainly in the conversation at the start of the year. Hey, San Jose have gone out and got Carlson to play in this space. Here's Boston, one of the top lines in hockey. Certainly, they proved themselves at the top of the Eastern Conference for a long time. So when you look at the Canucks, how far away are they from those being able to compete with those teams?
I mean, it's the thing that fascinates me about Boston is you talk to people who look at drafting, who, you know, scouts, analysts, that kind of thing, and they'll tell you that Boston, if they aren't the best, they're one of the best teams who've done in the draft in the last 5 years, which is pretty ironic if you talk about Vancouver. They rebuilt their team. I mean, obviously they still have their leading players who are still at the top of their game, but they found a whole bunch of young guys that have come through are now huge contributors on that team. You know, you look at the way that team is assembled, just line after line of depth.
Well, and Patrick, the way they went from winning the cup in 2011, having another final appearance, being back there now, I'd say they're the cup favorites right now, obviously. Yeah. And you know, yeah, you're right. You've got Marchand and Chara who are holdovers, Bergeron, but they've like rebuilt on the fly.
They did an amazing.
It's stunning.
And the amazing thing is they basically missed on a draft. Like they could have had Matthew Barzal.
Yeah.
Right. Like they basically missed. They had three picks in a row. And they didn't. You know. They. Everyone says they missed on that draft, and that's the amazing thing in the first round. They've done such a good job, from top to bottom, and obviously also have, you know, helps having, you know, a handful of Hall of Famers at the top of your lineup. I mean, that's a huge thing. And Tuukka Rask, who's been this incredible goaltender, right? I mean, his save percentage is, what, .923 in the regular season? I mean, that speaks to how well he's played, how good the defense has been. You know, if you're talking about how long is it until the Canucks are going to get that good, well, show me which forwards are going to turn into any of those depth forwards they have. Who's going to be the next Jake DeBrusk, you know?
Well, I think this is where, you know, 2011 really changed the story for this city and this franchise, along the lines that, do you really want to be a Columbus or a New York Islanders and get in the playoffs and pull an upset, but then really fall off the table? And I think this is really, you know, it used to be, look, I'm an old guy. I was around for 82. I was around for 94. I saw those magical runs where the city was just captivated with the fact that they actually got off onto something, and it was like people were just, they were so excited to go home and watch the playoffs every night. I think 2011 went, no, we actually want to win this, right?
Yeah.
We don't just want to be a good story or have a deep run in the playoffs. We want to win a Stanley Cup. And so I that's where I look at this construction job is, I don't even think it's half done yet.
No, it's not. And I there's a lot. I mean, if you're going to get lucky into the playoffs, okay, great. I mean, talk about 1982 being the ultimate sneaking into the playoffs and then having just the hottest streak of hottest streaks at the right time, and also getting all the right matchups. I mean, that's the thing about that team.
Yeah, they got lucky, but also when you have five-game series, a hot goalie, it makes so much more of a difference, as Brodeur was then, to get you going, get you rolling, and that's, you know, that played against the Oilers. Because I don't think the Oilers lose that series if it's seven games. But.
No, and I think at the end of the day, you know, the lesson, again, as I wrote last week, like, it's not just getting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think there's a belief from ownership, and I think there's a belief in parts of management, you know, Jim included, that, you know, if you get in, okay, well, look what happened. I mean, you have to look at how those teams are built and how well they played. Like, all four teams were in the top six or seven. I can't remember the number now, but top six or seven in winning percentage since January 1st, right? Yeah. These were the hottest teams in the league, right? Columbus was a bit of a fluke, right? I mean, they built a really strong team, right? They were probably better than the regular season result told us, but they built a strong team.
They added at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. They built, you know, they went for it, won two rounds, good for them. Went two rounds, good for them. But are you trying to do that? Is that what you're trying to do? Or are you trying to make the playoffs? And that becomes the question. Are you trying to win the cup?
Yeah.
And that's what Boston has done. You're totally right. That's what Boston's done. I mean, the lightning collapse was so shocking. It's really too much to kind of contemplate what happened there. But that was a team also, they're trying to build a team to win the Stanley Cup, and they hit the wrong wall, I guess. There are, you know, the Leafs were trying to, they built a team to try to win the Stanley Cup. The Jets, I mean, that was one of the amazing things I found putting together that Myers piece, is you start looking at all the pieces they have, and, you know, you need to be healthy. Again, 2011, you want to go all the way. Your team has to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And that's so much Winnipeg's story, is that they had huge pressure on their defense. They lost basically their two most important defensemen for a large part of the year. But you look at the depth at forward, like Matthew Perreault, who's this, you know, would be a second line winger on any other team, was essentially playing in a fourth line role for much of the second half of the season, because the Jets had such depth in their bottom six. And so to come back to your original question, how long until the Canucks, again, you know, they need to start finding some of these diamonds in the rough. And you know, maybe Cole Lind is that guy, but you know what? He scored three goals. You know, he had a terrible first season in the AHL. Whatever the reason was, whether it was because he didn't get along with the coach or the coach didn't trust him enough or didn't play him enough, whatever it was, you know, the patterns for players who score so little in their first American Hockey League season making the NHL, there's not a lot of them. And becoming regulars, there's not a lot of them. And so that, you know, Jonah Gadjevich, same kind of question marks now. You know, there's not a lot of guys, you know, that are coming up. Tyler Madden, maybe, you know, maybe he comes along. Maybe Will Lockwood, maybe. But, you know, you're at this point, you're hoping to hit. No, you're not going to hit on every one of these guys because it just doesn't work out that way. It's certainly not next year, that's for sure. You know, maybe we can start talking about it 2 years from now, but at the same time, you've already, by that point, you've blown your ELCs with Hughes and Pettersson, so now you're starting to talk about having to re-sign those guys and fit everybody else under the cap. And,
well, that's the thing, is when they all come up, when you look at the, you know, basically you're looking at three seasons in a row that you're going to be hit with that number. You know, hopefully the cap will go up. I will say this, though. I think that I can't go into the details of what I heard, because I was at this meeting at Rogers Arena for sort of, not promotional, but some sort of content partnerships moving into their 50th season for next year. And there seemed to be a sense of optimism around the office, like from the grassroots up in their building. And they're obviously very excited with the young players they have. They have some really cool stuff from a sort of a fan point of view coming up for this year. You know, some of which is out there already, but I think that there's so many things aligning, Patrick, that this could start to be a good news story again, but the on-ice product has to make that progress. And that is making the playoffs. And it is, you know, it's not necessarily winning around, but it's seeing these, and you some of the teams you talked about, you look at what the Leafs did. And okay, yeah, they've got the longest playoff drought in terms of not winning a series, but they already had the staples, got lucky with Auston Matthews, had made some other good draft picks, but they went out and they got John Tavares. Yep. And I think that's the kind of, to borrow the phrase from Mike Gillis, the bold moves that Canuck fans are going to need to see, because it's not just throwing seeds in a garden and waiting for them all to grow to see your harvest at the end of the year. It's like there needs to be work, continual hard work, creative, challenging thought done by the front office to make sure that you get those pieces, that you get that steal, that you, the free agent signing is not a Louis Erickson, but it's rather an impact player, or that you will give up something to get something. That's the other thing.
And that's why there's so much, I think, that's going to happen over the next 6 weeks. You know, because of all that, because there is a sense broadly in that organization of, you know, if we're really going to sell hope, we need to show progress, right? Which was the angle that they were trying to push all this season. And you know, at least points-wise, they delivered. They at least were better than the year before. You know, they were, quote-unquote, in the playoff race for some amount of time. It was always going to be a long shot. But from their perspective, if they're trying to sort of say, listen, we're trying to set a standard. And I talked about low bars. I mean, the bars, you know, the bar was pretty low coming into this season. And Elias Pettersson changed some of that. Quinn Hughes, you know, if he, assuming he has progress, I mean, we saw a lot from him already. He's gonna make that better. I mean, both those guys, a year older, you know, Pettersson didn't want to talk about it at the end of the year, but you knew he was feeling tired. It's the travel takes a lot out of you. The pace of the schedule takes a lot out of you. It's not, you know, he would say, oh, well, I was used to, you know, playing a lot of games and traveling in Sweden. It's like, yeah, you played twice a week at most, you know, like you took a bus to a lot of your games.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
You know, that takes there's a big difference. You know, even if you are just like, well, the flights are only a couple hours when they go on one of those big Eastern Road streets, it doesn't matter. Like, you're coming off the ice. You're getting on a plane. You're flying somewhere new. Like, that's tough. That's a tough thing to handle. It's not good for your body. You know, so he'll learn to manage that better. Quinn Hughes is going to be a challenge for him next year. You know, so then you look, you look and you say, okay, there's progress there. There's going to be progress there. I think Besser sort of, you know, insists he's going to come back healthier and fitter and ready to go on so many levels. And, you know, that maybe he will. And if that works out, that's great. but there's still, you know, gaps in that lineup. And, you know, Adam Gaudette is a guy we haven't talked a lot about, but Adam Gaudette's got a, you know, he's got a lot to show, I think. I think he's going to have to make a big step up next year. I think if that really is going to be progress, because otherwise, you know, your top two lines, as we saw down the stretch, they start running out of steam, and other teams know how to prepare. Everyone's learning all the time. It's not just your team improving. So.
Well, and I think we saw that in the first round of the playoffs, that the quality of the hockey just got amped up.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, as you referenced earlier, all those teams that kind of shocked us in the first round had been amongst the NHL's best over the last couple months of the season. But the leap, the intensity, the speed, the violence in the games in the first round, mm-hmm. And that probably is, to be fair, that's a learning process. This team's going to have to go through that to experience it a little bit. You know, there's not a lot of playoff experience now on this team. So I guess that's why they got Jay Beagle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's like I said, it's going to be an interesting 6 weeks. You know that ownership wants to see something big happen, that there's something there. They want to sort of build on last year's buzz. And, you know, I they're talking to Jim, you know, like the pressure's on Jim Benning, and Jim knows it too, right? I mean, he's got a year, he wants a new contract. If he's going to win an extension, he's going to have to show the ownership something. And that's a double-edged sword right there for you. You know, like, Benning wants the team to win. He wants the team to get better, but he hasn't shown a whole lot of success using that sword.
Well,
before.
And this is that's the overall question for ownership, is at what point, if a guy knows there's pressure on him to win, at what point does he maybe, I'm not even saying desperate, but risk a little bit more in a bigger move than he normally would have, because he knows he doesn't have the luxury of time. That the time's running out, I got to do this now, and then you're looking at, I think ideally for me, if the draft wasn't in Vancouver, I think this 10th pick would be on the table. I really do, because I look at what you're going to get there. And whether you're packaging that to move up, or you're going to look for futures, maybe getting. But I just think with the draft at home, we know they want the show. I just think it has.
Could you imagine not walking up there on a Friday night because you traded your first round pick?
Well, and they've said all along that they will not do that, right? Yeah. And part of that is the reason why. Yeah. But how about walking up to the podium and saying you've traded the first round pick for a young superstar? Or budding super, whatever it is. I just don't think it'll happen now, but I think if this was anywhere else, it's the sort of thing where a GM who knows he has to win now, with that 10th pick, I may be 2 to 3 years away from seeing that benefit. I need something now. So, and that's the question for ownership is, you know, if we're at this point next year, maybe you sneak into the playoffs. If you don't, then I think Benning's really in trouble. But even if you do, then is the temptation to do something that way to kind of speed things up here a little bit. But.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think it also comes back to that question of who in the end is making the shots, calling the shots. And
well, that's always been the big question.
You know, and that's something that Gillis in the end ran into at the end. And, you know, theoretically, that's Trevor Linden was hired to make the calls, and Trevor Linden's not there anymore. And, you know, Jim Benning, I'm sure, is hearing from the owner a lot.
And anything else from your notebook?
I think that's about it for now. I mean, I was going to mention, I mentioned at the end of the story about Myers, I referenced Dave Nonis, who was under pressure, you know, was told by his board of directors, who's the biggest splash free agent we can land? And he said, it's probably David Clarkson. And, you know, I bet you, I don't know Dave Nonis, but I have a feeling that if he were asked if he had been able to make that decision with no pressure whatsoever from ownership, would he have necessarily made that signing? I'm not sure he would, but there was pressure from ownership, and it was one of those ones, you want to keep your job. Sometimes you got to tell those guys what they want
to
hear.
It's not that dissimilar to the Lucic and Eriksson signings here, and that's pressure from management to bring in another piece through free agency. And if the crop that year isn't that great, then the prices are going to go up. That's how free agency works in the players' benefit. This year, there do seem to be more appetizing names out there.
And why McCann and Rutanen were kept here.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. Yeah. So, lots happening, lots to watch, I think, coming up in the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. But just before we go, I know that, you know, and certainly listeners to our podcasts over the years got to know Jason Botchford. We are off tonight to an event at Rogers Arena. That was sort of honor Jason, I believe. Jeff Patterson, his Patcast host, which was, of course, born here at the province, will emcee. And look, we could probably sit here for a couple hours and tell stories about Jason. The one thing that I will say is, and this is not a condemnation of anyone else, but sports journalism in many ways, it's very easy to mail it in. Every day is another game. Every day is another practice. Every season is the same as the last one. And it's very easy to just kind of, oh, yeah, this is formulaic. I know how to do this. This will be easy. You know, there are very few guys I've met in this business as someone who's his boss and was notoriously difficult to handle at times that cared about the business.
You were him.
Yeah, him. Jason took – Jason – I'm going to mix metaphors all over the place here. Jason hit a lot of home runs for me. I took some bullets for him. And that was good because that was the way that he operated. And Jason cared. And he cared about the story. He cared about the readers. And I think that's really what made him what he was and why he had such a connection with the fans. He really thought like a fan. Like, you know, we know he was a sports fan. He was a great journalist. I mean, again, I think some of the most impressive work I saw him do was on Luc Bourdon's death. He hadn't been on the Canuck beat very long. I think it was his first year, and he automatically flipped into that hard news type of mold. But Jason, when he came up with things like the Provies or our new, not that what we learned is new, everyone's sort of doing it, but the way it fit into our mold to deal with our deadlines. Like, Jason cared about the fan experience and was thinking, like, how can I deliver what I did? So, you know, he is a tremendous loss. I'm still shocked and stunned by it. I know you wrote a bit of a personal blog about it. So, you know, still thinking of him, and it's just very strange not having him around.
It's definitely going to be weird. I mean, I obviously have said a lot. I tweeted a bit about it initially, and then I wrote a personal thing the other day. But I think the thing that is sticking with me that maybe I haven't mentioned too much is a lesson I learned, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when David Carr, the New York Times media critic, passed away. And I had an email in my drafts folder that I thought about sending. It was sort of a question about sort of the future of media, that kind of thing, and kind of thing that I was thinking about. I never sent it. And, you know, I find myself thinking of sort of questions I had that, you know, maybe I decided not to ask in the moment, or I deferred on, or what have you. And I realized in hindsight that, you know, that they were the kinds of things that Botch was talking to everybody about. And that, you know, there were a lot of things that, you know, I went back and looked at a lot of our exchanges, you know, whether it's texts or, you know, on Twitter or whatever, you know, messages between each other, and, you know, the sort of willingness to talk about a lot of stuff. And I find myself thinking that's a lesson, you know, as someone who's still, you know, I may not be young personally, but still a relatively young journalist, there's a lot of questions that you just ask people. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And there's a lot to be learned. And, there are things I kind of wish now, you know, I didn't, obviously didn't expect, you know, that I wouldn't have much time with Jason on the beat, but, there's, you know, ask those questions. There's people you know, friends, family. If there's something you're curious about, ask the question.
It's a funny business, you know. Yeah. When I first got moved over to sports here in the mid-90s from news, because I started off in news as well, the guy I was working with on a beat in sports would not share numbers of players with me.
Right.
Saw me as a threat rather than a teammate. And I experienced a lot of that when I first came over. Mm-hmm. It was very much a, you have to pay your dues, but also an old boys club. And Jason was never like that. Jason hated the old boys club more than anything. And that's why he had so many celebrated media feuds in this town, was he didn't want to be told that his voice didn't count or that the fans' voice didn't count just because he hadn't been doing it as long as the other guys.
Yeah.
And that's a great point, Patrick. And, I know I see a lot of guys have put that out there. You know, for myself, it's been more on the editing end of it. But if anyone is new in this business or has questions, there's certainly – I'd love to help them out, and I know you've said the same for writers. I mean, you talk about yourself being young, but you've covered a full time hockey beat now for a year.
Yeah.
That's a veteran.
I did learn something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind saying that. So.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening, everyone. We're going to do these sporadically. As always, the Whitetail Podcast, you can subscribe through Apple Podcasts. We'll be doing them sort of here and there as news takes us up into the draft, and then obviously have blanket coverage at the draft with it being here in Vancouver and then in free agency. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.